and welcome to this AHDB podcast. I'm Tabitha Allen and I cover the north of England as a knowledge exchange manager for AHDB Beef and Lamb. Today we are discussing worms in sheep and cattle and some of the management tools that we can use to help on farm. I'm joined by Stephen Lawson from our northeast strategic farm and his vet Leanne Oliver from the Fold Farm Vets. Although late spring hopefully brings fresh grass and better weather, both of which have been slow to arrive this year, it also brings with it an increased risk from parasites. Particularly in young lambs, the first threat comes from Nematodiris, however coccidiosis, roundworms and blowfly join the list as months go on. So Stephen and Leanne, thank you for joining me. Stephen, can we start with you introducing the farm a little bit?
Hi, we're running around 1,100 yows, 70% of them are mules and the others are homebred Texels. We've got a herd of 40 pedigree Angus cows which are in a high health scheme, and we've recently just expanded into another farm, 530 acres, so that's given us 750 acres now, and we are running about 90 head of store cattle as well.
Great, and that's a new enterprise, that one, isn't
yes,
it?
Yeah, just taken on in February.
And Leanne, how long have you been working with Stephen and his vet?
I think Stephen and I go back about 8 or 10 years now, so I've seen progress through with the pedigree cattle and achieving the health status and maintaining that health status over a number of years, and then changes within the sheep flock as well and acquiring the new farm. So we've worked together for a number of years now.
And today obviously we're talking about parasites a little bit. If we look back kind of to last spring and summer, what were the issues that you were kind of facing on farm with the sheep particularly?
It happened in the middle of June. It was more of a second Nematodiris hit when you wouldn't really expect it, and we had real bad go with one group. Looking at the data, we lost a month's worth of growth on them, and looking at live data on them, they never fully recovered from the Nematodiris hit.
So a really big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what sort of thing would cause that, kind of that second peak?
Usually we expect a Nematodiris hatch after there's been a period of cold weather followed by a rise in temperature, a sudden rise, and the Nematodiris eggs hatch on the pasture and there's a big release of larvae. Now that happens at different places in the country at different times depending on what the temperature gradient is. And last year we had a particularly cold spring and then we had a relatively late Nematodiris hatch. But then on some farms that seemed to follow through to the point we had cases in kind of June and the beginning of July, which we'd never seen before. And there's been quite a lot of data and research into showing that very cold springs can result in very late hatches. And the problem with a late hatch is that if the lambs are a critical age between 6 and 12 weeks when the hatch occurs, then they are most susceptible, and that's when you get the most dramatic effects, whether that be mortality or clinical signs, disease, diarrhea, and the effect on growth rates that Stephen's describing.
And Stephen, you saw those growth rate effects because you're weighing quite a lot, aren't you?
Yeah, everything's got data from birth, so I think when they're at 12 weeks they drop back to 8 weeks, and some of them lambs that obviously hadn't been affected got away in September, but the ones that had been affected, they went away end of January, beginning of February. So
a good extra 3 months on farm.
Yeah, when we looked at that specific group, it was a real slow.
And that really demonstrates the difference in the years and stuff as well. But then actually again, with this spring being cold, we've had another interesting hatch. Interesting might not be the right word, but that's been delayed again this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So we're already seeing that it's a slightly later hatch. Time's not passed enough to know exactly what's happening. In our area in Northumberland, on the lowland farms, that there's been a hatch, and we've seen odd postmortems where we've diagnosed Nematodiris as the cause of death and we've detected Nematodiris eggs on worm egg counts. You have to be careful with diagnosing Nematodiris on worm egg counts because quite often the disease is seen in the what we call a pre-patent period. So the disease is caused by larvae in the gut rather than egg shedding adults. So you might get deaths and losses and scour before Nematodiris eggs appear in the faeces. So we've got to be careful, but using the Scops Nematodiris forecast can help us to predict when that hatch is going to happen. It has information from over 140 weather stations across the UK, monitoring temperatures and updating weekly on whether there's a low, moderate, high risk or very severe risk. And our area's just gone up to a high risk this week.
If anybody hasn't heard about the Scops forecast, so Scops is the Sustainable Control of Parasites in Sheep, and if you head over to their website, you can see the forecast, and it's really useful information as well as various quarantine and other protocols like that, but it's worth having a look at it. So with that in mind, the recent hatch this year and the problems last year, Stephen, what difference, what kind of changes have you made?
The field where we had the main problem, we've altered that to a silage field this year, and the ones that were silage fields last year, well, they've been silage fields for the last couple of years, so hopefully they'll have very low risk in them, so we're grazing them instead.
And how are you grazing them? Have you got everything set stocked or?
We've just gone into rotational grazing on 2 to 3 day shifts.
Right. So what effect can the rotation have on parasites?
Yeah, so I mean, an interesting thing Stephen's just mentioned there, and it's quite difficult to do on a lot of farms where they're heavily stocked, is to have yows and lambs on fields where yows and lambs haven't grazed in the previous 2 years, because Nematodeirus is unique in the fact that it can survive year after year on the same pastures and overwinter quite successfully. And then the fact that we're going to have some mixed grazing going on this summer is excellent, because the species of worm, the strongyles and the trichostrongyles, which are in the sheep, the cow and the bovine is a dead-end host for those worms, so it doesn't multiply up the egg numbers and continue to contaminate the pasture. Whereas obviously within the sheep, as the summer goes on, we get a build-up of eggs on the pasture and problems coming into the autumn. The cows will effectively be a worm hoover and clean those pastures to decrease the challenge to the sheep.
Does that work the other way as well, with the sheep helping with the calves?
It does indeed. So mixed grazing is definitely a big plus for parasite control.
Great. And Leanne was saying that we're going to do that this summer, Stephen, and that's with your new land, isn't it?
Yeah, we haven't done it previously just for the health status of the Angus cattle. We have done testing on the yows for yonies, etc., but we just feel it's a bit much of a risk to put the cattle there, so they're kept completely separate.
So you're going to continue to keep that pedigree cattle separate, and it's your stores enterprise that you're going to...
Yeah, because there's new blocks in a complete new farm, so it has no, there'll never be in any contact with the pedigree cattle. So we're going to be able to follow them. They're just in the process of getting trained with electric fencing and sorting water out and things, just so we can get the cell grazing going properly.
How's the electric fence grazing practice going?
It's going quite well, actually.
Nothing bust through yet?
No, not yet. What I tend to do is give them a bit of a bigger area, so they learn to... You know, just half a field, and they can get used to it and get a shock, and then they know to respect it. Rather than, I think if you put them in a tight area, if they get a shock, then maybe say haven't got anywhere to run and force through it. So
if we keep looking at parasites a little bit, Leanne, what other parasites do we need to be starting looking towards after Nematodeirus?
Yeah, so a mixed infection of Nematodeirus along with coccidiosis at this time of year is a big risk. The clinical signs of coccidiosis and Nematodeirus look very similar, so it's really important to get a proper diagnosis, because the treatment for Nematodeirus is obviously different to the treatment for coccidiosis. So that's where vets can get involved and do some worm egg counts to help make sure that we're treating for the right thing. And then as the summer moves on, we'll see a move from Nematodeirus to the other helminths that will infect the sheep during the summer, the likes of strongyle eggs. And one of the things we have seen in previous years is if the Nematodeirus hatch has been quite late, we've seen strongyles on worm egg counts before the Nematodeirus. And depending on the resistance profile of the farm, it might be that we need to be using different wormer groups before we use the white wormers, which is what is usually advised for Nematodeirus, obviously dependent on the history of the farm.
Yeah, so that's the case, that with the white wormer is still very effective on Nematodeirus on basically all farms, but also basically all farms have some resistance with those other worms. So if you don't have anything else from a worm egg count, then just white wormer for Nematodeirus is probably the best. But if you've got other things, then you need to be considering what works for the strongyles, because they're going to do as much damage.
Yeah, they will affect daily live weight gains as much as, well, to a bigger degree than your Nematodeirus. And actually, even it was always thought that the worms within the gut affected the absorption of nutrients from the gut. It's actually been proven that having a worm burden decreases the feed intake of an animal, and that has an effect on its daily live weight gain as well.
Thank you.
The last couple of years, Stephen started using worm egg counts on farm, and that's gone very well. How have you found that, Stephen?
Yeah, I find it quite easy. Going around the sheep in the morning, pick the samples up, and you can tell if they need doing or not. I mean, this time we haven't wormed any yows pre-lambing, just no eggs about it. So I tested them a couple of times just to make sure there wasn't a dodgy test or anything like that. But I think we had the yows in really good condition this year. And yeah, it saved bit of time it takes you to do the test saves a lot more time and hassle getting the lambs in to doze, because if they're in, they're not eating. So it's not quite the expense, I think, saved, because the dozing isn't terribly expensive. It's the time, you know, there's just no need to do it.
Yeah, the time and that growth's actually really important,
yeah.
Isn't it? If they're standing yarded for a day, then they're not eating. You mentioned a couple of things that were interesting there, that the nutrition of your ewes meant that they didn't have bad burden at all. Leanne, what's the kind of premise behind that?
Yeah, so if yows are in good condition and they've got a strong immune system, then they won't allow worms to replicate in their gastrointestinal tract. So again, the sheep becomes the end of the road, like a dead-end host, and doesn't multiply up the parasites within them. If yows are in poor condition or they're stressed, or they're, for example, suckling triplets, then they're more likely to not be able to fight off the worm burden and therefore allow the worms to complete their life cycle and eggs to pass in the feces and contaminate the pasture. And if that's happening at lambing time early in the season, those numbers are going to multiply up through the summer months and affect lamb growth rates towards the end of the year to a bigger degree.
So it's something that's a bit late when they're coming out, when the podcast is now, but when you're getting around to next year, if your ewes are in good condition, it can make a huge difference for the rest of your parasite control over the summer.
Yeah, and although Stephen's highlighted the very practical aspects of doing a worm egg count and not needing to worm, and that's it can be a money saving, but also it has a big time aspect to it. And the fact that we're not regularly worming, when you worm a sheep and give them a wormer, you are killing out the susceptible or good worms and leaving the resistant worms to have a party. And the more frequent we do that, the quicker we're going to select for resistance and the faster the resistance is going to develop on farms. So we only select for resistance when you apply a wormer to a sheep. So if you don't apply a wormer to a sheep, you're not selecting for resistance. So that's got to be a good thing in terms of responsible anthelmintic usage.
And am I right in thinking you helped Stephen practice and train up to do his old fecal egg counts?
Yeah, so we do worm egg counts for all our clients within the practice, and we offer a same day result for convenience so that you're not waiting to see whether you've got to worm the lambs or not. But Stephen had that many groups of lambs and wanted a quicker result and wanted trained up himself on how to do them, and we helped Stephen get set up with a microscope and all the training, and then helped for a short while and interpreting the worm egg count results with Stephen, and then now he's more than happy to just do it himself.
Yeah, and if there's anything I'm not too sure about, I send them in.
It's good that you can fit it in practically, and you are just picking them up in the morning when you're checking around and stuff.
If you end up worming, Stephen, do you usually do a drench check after you've wormed just to make sure that it's been effective?
We've done a drench check for the yellow wormer because we got quite a hit with some yellow lambs. So I think it was like an 800 egg count, so it was quite a good high count. And yeah, I can't remember the appropriate days, but whatever you said, we did that and it came back, you know, more negative, if you like. It was a full clean, but we are going to look at the other wormers as well to see if we have got any resistant issues with any wormers.
So the protocol for that, it's 7 days with a yellow, isn't it?
That's
that you check
right.
Again.
Yeah.
What is it for the other ones?
10 to 14 days for a white or a clear wormer. And it's just a way of building up a resistance profile for your farm, so you know what's effective and what is not effective. But of course, we don't go from having no resistance to having resistance. It's a percentage scale. You don't really notice visually without worm egg counts that there's a resistance problem there until your worm is only 50% effective. And by that time, you know, past the point of no return, that product is fairly useless on that farm. So we not want to know what's working when, so we can target the worm treatments appropriately and not use a product that isn't working for us.
And that's a good point on kind of when you visually can see it as well, because it's applicable to whether the worm is working, but it's also applicable to whether they've got a worm issue. But it's going to be quite a big issue before you're seeing an issue in your lambs. So if you're checking regularly, you're going to pick that up. I mean, Stephen, you probably pick it up slightly quicker if you're doing weights a lot.
Yeah, so we're probably every couple of weeks worm checking. Then whenever the lambs is in, they're just automatically weighed, so we can see the daily live weight gain straight away. So we start to see there's an issue, and certainly from field to field we can see what's going on. So hopefully before there's a main bad issue with it, we can stop it.
So the other thing with parasites and thinking about grazing as well, are we at a higher risk at the moment, Leanne, with some parasites because they're having to graze quite slow because the grass hasn't been growing?
Yeah, I think that's why we've seen such a large number of cases of coccidiosis this year, because the lambs came out of the sheds, there wasn't the grass there, the mothers didn't have a lot of milk, so they were grazing at a younger age and they were grazing in the bottom of the sward, So we've seen more coccidiosis this year than what we've probably ever seen in the last 5 to 6 years, I would say. So again, as soon as lambs start to scour, get some muck samples, get them into your vet and get a diagnosis based on that, because it would be all too easy to think that that was an early Nematodirus hatch and be giving them a white wormer, which isn't going to do anything for coccidiosis.
And what's the kind of protocol if, say, that worm count comes back that actually they've got cocci and strong gals or and Nematodirus?
Yeah, multiple treatments may be required and you know, appropriate gap between them so those products can be used safely. Sometimes you'll find that actually the two kind of have like a symbiotic relationship, that actually if you worm the sheep and get rid of the worm burden, the cocci numbers drop anyway. And we've also got to be aware that with coccidiosis there's pathogenic species and non-pathogenic species, so you can have a very high cocci count, and if they're kind of the good cocci that aren't going to cause disease, then that's not a problem. So it's kind of weighing all those things up and sometimes doing further lab tests to decide what's significant and what's not and what's the best course of action.
And am I right in thinking that slightly different to other worms, the cocci is often located in one or two spots, or it kind of stays in the same sort of place within the farm?
Yeah, usually. It's always described as a disease of intensification. So if you've got lambs and yows in certain areas, they've got favourite places where they want to lie, or there's lamb creeps and kind of high traffic of lambs, then that's where the coccidiosis areas will be. So again, you know, Stephen using clean pasture and moving sheep regularly all decreases the chance of having problems.
So Stephen, this year, where are we at with parasites? Have you done any worming yet?
We don't lamb till April, so generally in our area we're really looking from end of May onwards. Sometimes, you know, we need to be going in at 20th of May, sometimes it's very beginning of June, just depending on what the weather is. So we're just keeping a watchful eye on them at the minute.
I think you can certainly sometimes get it a bit wrong, as much as you look at the assessment and look at the risk assessment and the Scots forecast and think, you know, we need to go in and treat, and then actually find that you're too soon in the hatches. This happened a wee bit later, and then having to go in and treat a second time, and that's probably better than being too late altogether. But again, not ideal, because we're using antihistamines when we don't need to. So it's different every year, and it's just using the information you've got available to make the right choice.
So the other thing I mentioned at the beginning was blowfly and kind of fly strike. When does that start to hit?
With us, we were using the Click product, but because of withdrawal period, and if the Nematodirus is really late and we haven't gotten them in, we then have an issue with lambs. We're having to wait on lambs to get away, but they're still in withdrawal period, so we just use a Crovet product now, and yeah, it kind of gets done with the first worming, whatever that, you know, June time. But we do find different fields will have different issues with. Some's bad for flies, and other fields you can get away with. But again, if the lambs is kept clean and you can worm them before they get dirty, stop less chance of eggs getting laid on them.
I think that's the same with bad feet as well, isn't it? You know, yeah. The flies love getting into a smelly scald or foot rot as well, and quite often when they've been laying down and their dirty feet have been near the kind of armpits, then you find that the flies get in there. So I think it's just careful monitoring, but it seems to be earlier and earlier each year that we've got to protect for blowfly, and the same with the tick as well. You know, they seem to be almost year round now.
Is that weather related? Is it again kind of changing how the seasons are panning out a little bit?
Yeah, weather related, but also habitat related. I think we're seeing a lot more ticks on farms where we didn't used to see tick, just because of environmental schemes and the like, the herbage that's there, that there is an environment there for the tick now that wasn't there before. And obviously buying and selling sheep and sheep moving around the country, there's been ticks like in the east now, where it used to be traditionally a western problem.
Is there any relationship between the blowfly and kind of the breeds? Are any breeds more susceptible to it, or is it more linked to kind of how dirty they are?
Just how dirty they are and how dense their fleece is quite often, and moisture levels as well. So all of those things mixed together. If we get a really warm, muggy spring and summer, then we'll see a lot more blowfly. So another job for this time of the year is to sit down and assess kind of what's happened at lambing time and look at the incidence of diseases. So that might be yow diseases and lamb diseases, and sitting down with your vet and making a bit of a plan about what was good, what was bad, and what could be done better for next year. I just think it's a long time to go after lambing to remember exactly what's happened, and having some data to look at and compare year on year is really good. And now is a really good time of year to actually have one of these chats, like make a parasite plan for the summer. And it's really crucial, because as soon as you kind of fall off the trodden path and you start having problems in lambs with worms or Nematodirus or cocci or whatever, you've already lost those daily live weight gains, and that's really as Stephen's mentioned, it's really difficult to get that back. So also clostridial vaccines are crucial at this time of year to get that right. So blowfly, cocci, worm plans, worm egg counts, clostridial vaccines, and looking back over lambing time, they're all kind of really important things to get right this time of year. And having a chat with your vet and getting it documented as a health plan or health review, probably the best way to do that.
Yes, because there's quite a lot to consider in there, isn't it? So just looking at it once a year. I know a lot of people kind of get a health plan done and it's getting back to it and really using it kind of practically. Have you found that useful, Stephen, going back on it and looking at it again?
Yeah, we kind of already know what's set out, and yeah, it's really good, because if there's anything we're not sure about, call or WhatsApp. And I think that's the only thing sometimes, yeah, it's definitely with the worms, it can be so variable throughout the seasons, can't it, you know?
I think it's just having that continual contact, because you can sit down once a year, but things change and weather changes, or you might take on some different land or buy some different sheep, or you know, there'll be different risk factors, and just having that open line of communication with your vet, and it can just sometimes be an informal chat just to find out what's going on, is kind of really important to make sure things are going the right way.
That's an interesting point about buying in sheep. So there's obviously kind of quarantines that you can do when you're buying in sheep, and they're in the Scots principles as well, but can we just chat through them?
Yeah, so when obviously Stephen bought sheep in to stock the new farm last year, wanted to make sure that we weren't bringing any nasties in, irrespective of what you do on your own farm in terms of managing wormers and resistance. It's very easy to buy resistant worms in sheep, and therefore them shed those resistant eggs onto your pastures and contaminate your farm. So it's really important that sheep come in and they get a quarantine dose. So the licensed product at the minute in the UK is Zolvix. So the sheep come onto the farm, they remain in the pens with some water and some feed, they get a Zolvix dose, they're yarded for 48 hours, so they shed eggs out the pens, and then they go on to sheep, they go on to pasture where sheep have grazed. So it's really important they don't go into clean pasture, because if there is any eggs and eggs shed from worms that are naturally resistant to Zolvix, of which there will be a few in number that have that gene within them, we don't want those eggs to be shed onto a pasture that's completely clean, because then they've got no kind of susceptible normal good worms to breed with, and you get a pure population very quickly. So it's very, very important that sheep stay in the pens 48 hours and then go on to pasture that has been grazed by other sheep the previous couple of weeks.
And there's other things to consider there as well, cod in their feet. What kind of comes into play for those with, just because it's all, there's lots of things to consider, isn't there, when you're buying new sheep?
It's really difficult. So digital dermatitis, cod is a big one. So again, keeping those sheep isolated from other sheep and examining them regularly, treating any feet. And if it's considered to be, you know, like digital dermatitis, for example, then possibly culling that animal and not adding it to your flock. Sheep scab, there's huge issues with sheep scab across the country, various hotspots, and some of the anthelmintic injectables that have been used in years gone by to treat scab are no longer effective against the sheep scab mite. The sheep scab mite has developed resistance to those products. In some parts of the country, the only way we control sheep scab now is by dipping rather than using injectable anthelmintics. So you've got to be very careful when you're buying sheep on, that if they've had an injectable anthelmintic for scab control, that doesn't necessarily mean that they haven't got scab. So again, isolating those sheep, and there's blood testing available now where you can test for sheep scab, and that can be a really useful tool for quarantine. All your endemic diseases like Yonies and OPA and MV, big minefield for buying sheep in. A resistant fluke, exactly the same as your resistant worms. You can buy resistant parasites on and introduce them to your farm if your quarantine treatments aren't done properly. So there's a huge minefield when it comes to buying in sheep, and that's a big chat with your vet in its own right.
But really important to follow quarantine protocols. They are on the Scops website. They are going to be updated soon to try and make them easier to follow and get the scenarios on your farm, because as Leanne said, it's a bit of a minefield. You also mentioned a parasite there that we haven't talked about yet. Stephen, is your farm very fluky, or are you a lucky one?
Yeah, again, it's a difference of years. Not every year is the same. Some years we do, some years we don't. This year just gone, they were fluked in the back end pre-tupping, and they were also fluked again in February time just after scanning. It's just one of them years, and other years we don't, so we just sort of test and see what the situation is.
Yeah, so I think because we've known that there's been fluke on the farm previously, we went in with a routine triclobendazole product pre-tupping without doing any testing at that time of year. Until the fluke become adults within the liver, you can't test muck samples for fluke eggs. So if they're picking up immature fluke infection in the autumn, then you can't really test for fluke eggs until January, February time. And that's what we did this year, was got some samples from the yows in January, and there was fluke eggs present. So then we went in with a second flucicide, and we didn't use triclobendazole, we used a clozantal-based product just to reduce the selection pressure on the triclobendazole.
And that works better on all, that only covers older one, doesn't it? Whereas
yeah, that's right. So your triclobendazole products kill all stages of fluke from 2 days in sheep, whereas your clozantal products just kill from 6 weeks onwards. So by the time we've had a cold winter and there isn't any fresh kind of fluke to be picked up from the pastures, then we can use a product that kills adult fluke quite safely and preserve the triclobendazole for when we need it.
And how about the cattle with fluke? What does anything get done there?
Yeah, so the one important thing to remember is that the fluke will infect sheep and cattle. It's the same fluke over both species. So if you're mixed grazing and you've got sheep and cattle on the same fields, they have the same fluke risk. So it's no good treating your sheep for fluke and not your cattle, and vice versa. So I think the cows, they got a Crosulon-based product this year, I think.
Yeah, and they tested for fluke as well, didn't they?
Yeah, that's
sure.
Right.
What about other parasites within the cattle? Are you doing any other tests on them, or do they get a routine treatment?
We just use routine treatments in the cattle, in the young calves.
I think that's mostly because the worm egg counts aren't as reliable in cattle as what they are in sheep, because the egg shed doesn't correlate as nicely with the number of worms that are in the gut. So you might have few worms shedding a lot of eggs, or a lot of worms shedding very few eggs. So it's a little bit more difficult to be as objective about it as what it is in the sheep. So when we say dose routinely, they're not getting something every 3 or 4 weeks. They'll get maybe 2 doses during the summer months, and then the heifers and young stock will get a wormer at housing as well for lungworm control and gut worm control.
I suppose there's definitely a big practical thing there, isn't there? Because getting lambs in to dose them can be tedious but fairly easy, whereas with cattle it's kind of another whole setup and getting them back to the yard and everything as well, isn't it? Quite a big handling challenge.
Yeah, and it depends. With Angus, we're running them outside more, so quite a few of the cows stayed out longer, and again it kind of depends on the back end, so it's just kind of again talking with the vet and working out what's the best situation for that time of year.
And I think with all your reseeding you're doing and your kale and you're out wintering and all that kind of stuff, it might be that we get to a stage that we're never going to have cattle following on from cattle, so the number of the worm treatments that we're going to have to do, and even possibly your food treatments, is going to be massively reduced and probably changing quite a lot over the next 12 to 18 months, I would say.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you've mentioned that you were rotating with the sheep. Are you doing a similar sort of method with the cattle, with the Anguses as well as the...
We're starting on some parcels. It's trying to get water, especially for cattle in the hot summer. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be taking a tank of water to cows and calves. So we've got a few year, 4 or 5 year plan to start getting fields split up, semi-permanent fencing, and get water pipes put in, because it is making a big difference on the sheep side. So we've done so much for the cattle and seen good results, but it's just time for that infrastructure to get into it.
I think that's probably all that we've got time for today, so thank you Stephen and Leanne for joining us. If you want any more information on any of the things that we've discussed today, please visit the AHDV website, which is ahdv.org.uk. You can also visit the SCOPS or COWS website. So the SCOPS is for sheep, which is scops.org.uk, and for cattle, it's cattleparasites.org.uk.